You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, from the coast of this wonderful podcast. And on today's show, we are into our player review season, breaking down the highs, the lows, the best, the worst, and the biggest questions with the Pacers players heading into their offseason and talking about how they performed in the previous season and how it compares to what we think will happen the next season. So, as I've been doing on these shows, today's show will be on Justin Holiday, kind of going theme by theme week. So, last week we did the rookies, Goga and Aaron Holiday, and this week we're doing the three-point specialist off the bench. And I think that's actually an understatement for Justin Holiday, but turned to Doug McDermott earlier in the week, and I'm doing Justin Holiday today. Like I said, it'll be pretty simple. We'll go through kind of the highlights of their season, best, worst moments, other things that happened during the year that liked and didn't like. Then I will do a last kind of part. We'll end up with their biggest questions. Justin Holiday, I think that's kind of an obvious few out there, but I got a couple that maybe you didn't see coming. At least I got three right now, but maybe a fourth one in mind. So Justin Holiday ended up on the year finishing with really one of the best outings of his career, right? He finished with a 40% three-point shooting percentage in 73 games. That's all the games that could be played this season for the Pacers. So did not miss a game the entire year. Averaged 8.3 points. Had an effective field goal percentage of 56%. I mean, that is far and away his career best. I mean, you're talking about this next one is about 52, 3 years ago in New York. Last year when he was with Chicago / Memphis, it was 49%. So he just had an incredible three-point shooting year. He was a really good defender for this Pacer team. I mean, his finished stat line just real fast. 1.3 assists, 3.3 rebounds, 1.2 steals per game. But defensively, he was a sort of versatile player for this team. You could use him in multiple different ways, right? We're talking guarding anywhere from a 2 to 4 at times. He ended up starting in the playoffs for them, and it's kind of their big adjustment, but it didn't work. But that still says a lot about the player he kind of was. And I think by most measures, it was a career year. I mean, he's 30 years old now, hitting obviously about to hit free agency. So kind of maybe the right time to peak this as an NBA journeyman, right? He started in Philadelphia where he played 9 games. Then he was in Golden State for a little while. Then he was in Atlanta, Chicago, New York, and Memphis. I mean, that's, you know, 5 teams in 5 years, basically. Basically, 6 teams in 6 years. So really just kind of a guy who's been pushed around the league a bunch of places, probably at one point thought he was out, then he got back in, and now he's a really, you know, decent NBA player. You know, I'm not here to say Justin Holiday is like the solver of all problems, but he's a really good guy if he's your 6th or 7th man on a team, because he can put up points when you need to. He seems to stay healthy. He's played, you know, 82 games, the full amount of games, 3 of the last 14, but 82, 2 of the last 4, and that's possible. I mean, in the last 4 years, it's 82, 72, 82, and 73. It's a pretty durable player that is super valuable on, you know, teams looking to make playoff runs, because you just need bodies at nights of decent players. At the same time, he's a versatile defender, and he just does a lot of the little things that sort of help you win games in the regular season. Now, I don't know about his postseason play. I think that's maybe his weakest moment. We'll talk about that in a few. But overall, I think if you were to say you got this season of Justin Holiday, this might be his best season of his career in terms of just like percentages and efficiency, right? I think there's years where he can put up more points if he gets, you know, more shots, like you saw in Chicago a couple years ago. He put up 12 points a game. But in terms of, you know, the efficiency combined with winning, this might be the best season of his career. And, you know, that's a reason to think about if you're a Pacers fan on re-signing him. So I want to talk about his best and worst moments of the season. But first, let's take one little break to talk about our wonderful friends over at BuiltBar.com. As you know, Built Bar has been a sponsor of this podcast for a while now. Built Bar is that great protein bar company offering 18 amazing protein bars that come in all kinds of flavors, from mint brownie to cookies and cream to peanut butter brownie. These bars are 100% covered in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. They're great for the healthy conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious snack. They're low in sugar, high in protein, which is great if you're trying to either build muscle or just kind of find a way to have a low-calorie snack to fill up yourself in the midday. My favorite one, I consistently said, is the peanut butter one that has 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, and 5 grams of sugar. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code Locked On, you get $10 off your next order. That's right, use the promo code Locked On for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Pinpointing Justin Holiday's worst and best moments, I actually think is pretty easing my mind. I kind of, obviously, when I prepped this podcast, I kind of was going through a couple of his games. But, you know, the best moment I didn't find, you know, I find there's probably a couple that you can put down for him. But so the only time he scored over 20 points this season was against Toronto, where he went 6 of 9 from 3 in a 1-point loss. That was a really nice night. I remember that one. It was in early February. Kind of a back and forth game they ended up losing to Toronto. You know, I think that was a really good moment for him, but I honestly think his best moment came right before the bubble against Dallas when he went 4 of 5 from 3 and helped them win on the road in Dallas. That was part of that. You know, they went 4 of 5 on the road against, you know, they went into Cleveland, into San Antonio, in Chicago, and Dallas to win. And not that those were, you know, a murder's row of schedule, but the thought was those are, you know, four road games, you know, five straight road games they put Milwaukee in there too is tough for anybody, and they're basically playing like every other night, and he just was a much needed spark in that game. And, you know, I think those were probably his two best moments, just because he, the thing that made Justin Holiday so valuable this year was just that he was a nearly identical knockdown three-point shooter to McDermott, which is saying a lot, and he just had a little bit more to him. So when you play both him and McDermott together, you're looking at basically you're putting out 240% plus shooters. You throw in Sabonis in there and throw in McConnell, who's I would say one of the best, you know, passing point bench, you know, point guards comes off the bench, and you really had a nice lineup that was sort of spacing and ability to open up lanes for all kinds of people. I mean, how many times did McConnell get that 6 foot, you know, 2-point jumper to go in, because he just had a ton of space, because you really could not leave a guy like Holiday or McDermott, because they moved just enough where you have to, like, they're not just sitting in the corner stationary, and they made the 3-point shot just kind of off, kind of small little movements enough that they were just lethal. And it allowed both McDermott and Holiday, frankly, to play end of games at times. I mean, you can see Holiday's minutes, right? You know, usually they were in the 20 range, but there's times with injuries and whatnot, he popped to 27 to 30. I mean, you could push him if you needed to, and he was really effective because he just created that spacing, and then he had a nice little added defense to carry the team along when, you know, maybe that shot wasn't falling. But I mean, for the better part of 3 months, that shot just kept going. I mean, you could say I go to the Boston win early in December. That was part of that run, I think, where I want to say Brogdon was out, where they beat Toronto maybe a week or two earlier, and then Boston came in and they beat them. He had, you know, 17 points that night. I mean, those are some of his top moments, in my opinion. I still think I would go back to the Dallas game. I know it's hard to remember that right before the bubble, but winning those 4 or 5 on the road, no matter, even though they weren't great teams, was really big. He played really well in that game, and I thought it was a huge part of kind of carrying them in that fourth quarter. A worst moment for him, I mean, he was just not very good in the bubble this year. He wasn't the worst player. I mean, he had a couple good games. Houston, he really shone with 18 points, but that was kind of that crappy game where, like, it was like everybody just shoot free range with the Pacers. They were already kind of locked into the 4-5 matchup. In the playoffs, you know, he played really well in game one, but then he started game 3 and 4, and he just wasn't as good. He was just not nearly as effective in those games. Part of that was they were making him go around screen instead of switching, and I think that tired him. He just wasn't as good. I mean, he wasn't, you know, the worst, but those are probably his worst moments, because you talk about the moment, and he really just didn't kind of step up to it. Now, maybe they're asking too much of a guy who, you know, zero playoff experience pretty much, and is a habitual kind of seventh man, and maybe you shouldn't expect starting level play out of him, and that's maybe fair to him, frankly, and it's just like not a fair spot. But I just think he wasn't that good in those games. And then I think early on in the year, you could point at those, he just wasn't that good early on. They were still trying to figure things out. He had a couple of really miserable games, like against Houston in early November, where he went 2-11 from 3. You know, early on, I mean, against Cleveland, 2-7 from 3. I mean, he just wasn't that great to start the season, but most of the bench guys, if you look at them, were just not really that good to start. It kind of took them, I would say, 10, 15 games, and they kind of figured it out, and then they kind of hit a stretch where they're really good. I mean, the first three were obviously terrible, and then it was kind of figuring out how to place the ball into Turner and when to space out the timing and whatnot. Once they figured that out, they went on a run. I mean, there's a stretch basically from mid-November, finally, like late, literally more like late November, really through Vic's return, until that kind of really benched in February, where they were winning, like, you know, 70% of their games, and were on pace to win, you know, 55 games like that. So he was a big part of the bench sort of really becoming, I would say, one of the most lethal lineups in the league, really. I mean, that four bench guys with Sabonis was really, really good. I would love to see him play him, McDermott, Jeremy Lamb, McConnell with Sabonis. I mean, that would have been even deadlier lineup, in my opinion, just because you could kind of, right, you could put him at the four, or McDermott a little bit four, and Lamb is just a really good player. I think Lamb's obviously better than his brother, but he played well with his brother at times, which also helped. I do think part of his brother's kind of blossoming this season, let's say, I think I said that last week, was part of Justin Holiday being there. I think having
his older brother there for Aaron Holiday at least meant that, you know, Justin could provide kind of that stability and maybe that just kind of person he could lean on at times to help, you know, in those struggling moments. I think that was helpful. I mean, I think bringing him in, they didn't bring him in just because of his brother, but just because he was Aaron Holiday's brother, but I think that doesn't hurt the team. And I think the one thing this could help by having Holiday is it could help get Drew Holiday in the future. I mean, maybe the three brothers want to play together. I don't know. I mean, they seem like they're kind of close, but who knows? But it just seemed like he definitely brought kind of, I would say, almost a maturity to the team, right? The team is overall pretty young. I mean, he was probably one of the oldest guys on the team, right? I mean, you go on the list, you've got Brogdon's 27, obviously very, very mature player, but like Sabonis and Turner, both 24, TJ Warren, 26, McConnell's in his late 20s, McDermott's in his, you know, early mid-20s. I mean, he's probably one of the older players on the team, had a lot of experience, you know, played with a lot of teams, stuff like that. So he did provide that for the team, just some of that, like, kind of veteran-ness that they really needed, frankly. They just don't, they didn't have a lot of veterans on the roster. Another thing I want to shout him out for, I know maybe it's kind of flew under the radar, but his vlogs during the bubble were some of the most entertaining things of this pandemic, I would say, especially from Pacer world. And what I mean by that is that, like, we never really saw much. Like, you didn't really get to see the bubble that much from, like, Fox Sports, stuff like that, because there wasn't a lot of media there. You don't get, like, all the, like, the constant tweets and pictures behind the scenes, but you saw some of the kind of behind-the-scenes bubble stuff from Justin Holiday. You got to see, you know, the testing protocols and just the, you know, how he was, you know, what the room, stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of neat and cool, and I, you know, thought it was kind of interesting that he did that as well. I mean, I would recommend go checking them out. I forget. Marina, what is Justin Holiday's YouTube handle? Remember? Well, whatever it is, you should go check out his videos on YouTube. They were really good. I think he posted.
It's just his name.
So it's just his name. It's at Justin Holiday on YouTube. He posted, what, three or five videos? 3 to 5, probably, or so. They're all about 10 minutes long. They're pretty good. So go check those out. But let's take one more break, and then I want to do kind of the biggest question with him. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is also brought to you by our friends over at Roman. Talking about ED isn't easy. Usually you just brush it off or blame it on something like, I lost my mojo, or we can avoid it altogether because it's like it's been a long day or you're just not feeling well. Well, with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. Healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan if medication is appropriate. Roman will ship it to you for free in 2 days. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet, and getting started is simple. Just go to roman.com/lockedon and get a complete online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. A complete online visit today to get in with a healthcare professional and take care of it. And right now, if you go to getroman.com/lockedonmba today, if approved, you get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/lockedonmba and getroman.com/lockedonmba for $15 off your first order. So I have four big questions for Justin Holiday, kind of heading into this. So the first one is the obvious one and is, does he want to return a Pacer, right? This is going to be the biggest question is, How much money does he get? But really, it's does he want to be a Pacer, right? I don't think he's going to get blown away with any offers. And the Pacers have probably the ability to offer him the most amount of money, considering how much the mid-level is. And if he wants to be here, he can probably stay here, right? He can probably negotiate a 3-year 30 deal, somewhere in that range, right? And the question does he want to be here? And it seemed like after the bubble, it was kind of iffy, right? He was not happy with the coaching. He didn't like the fact they weren't switching all the time. I think playing the two big lineups is sort of clunky for most players, especially guys like him. And they just didn't have a good playoffs, and that kind of ruins, you know, whether you want to be at a place or not. You know, it'd be interesting to see if they go after his brother, Drew, and they bring Drew and Aaron and him all together, and does that make him want to stay? Maybe. That easily could work, I guess. But to me, he has to decide whether he wants to be here or not. I don't have a great read on this, but something I would definitely look to kind of read the tea leaves is whatever happens, you know, if, you know, I think the Pacers won't get out bargained for him. It's really more of a fit thing for him, because I think he fits here in terms of just, like, he played really well next to McDermott. He had his best year of his career, so clearly there was something working this year. But does he want to go somewhere else to play somewhere with, you know, a more championship caliber team or whatever? You know, that's what he has to decide for himself. Second question I had, and this is kind of, I think, actually the most important one, is how does this season for him translate into the following you know, 2-3 season, right? He's 30 years old, so he probably got 2 or 3 more years of his peak. And how does that translate, right? Is this a blip in the radar, or is this, you know, a consistent thing he's going to put up the next 2 or 3 years, right? So the thing to look at with him is from January 2nd, the first game of the 2020 year, through the stoppage, which was March 10th, he shot 49% from the field and 47% from three on about 4.7 attempts. I mean, obviously, those numbers are not going to hold for a full season, but talking about a 31-game stretch, and that's how, if you have a 31-game stretch like that, that's how you get your percentage into the 40s. That's how you help, you know, during this stretch, I'm going to guess the Pacers won a ton of games. I mean, probably 17 to, you know, 18 of these 31 games. I mean, this was an incredible stretch for him. This is what, you know, any team that gets him is looking for. And, you know, I think in my view, I'm not sure, I think this is more for real than the blip, right? I'm not sure he's a 40%. You know, 3-point shooter the next 3 years, but I think he's probably in the high 30s, and that's pretty good. And if he's taking 4.5 attempts a game like he was, that's pretty solid. With him, it's the other stuff he does, right? If he shoots high 30s from three, and most shots are from three, and then he can also play a little defense on the side and fill in for injury time, that makes him really valuable because just kind of he's basically a 3-and-D, right? That's what you know every team wants is a 3-and-D type player, and that's kind of my next question is. How do other teams view this, right? So I don't think he gets more than $10 million a year, but is it possible? It could be. I mean, there could be some either really have to be some one of the crappier teams that says they really just want him, you know, blow him away with 2 for 30 or 3 for 45, which I don't see him getting. I mean, I think he's looking at probably 8 to 10 million range, which is right where the Pacers can't afford him. But, you know, if I'm a team, I'm hesitant to offer him more than 2 years, probably 2 or 3 years. I mean, the Pacers might have to do it to keep him. But you know, he's been good, but career-wise, he's really more like a 35, 36% three-point shooter. I mean, that's how he shot in New York and Chicago when he was playing a bunch of games for both those teams. Even in Memphis, he shot a little actually worse than that. So now you make a case with the Pacers, you know, it's the ideal fit, right, next to another shooter in McDermott, next to a good passer in McConnell, next to another good, you know, center who could pass in Sabonis. So maybe it's just this is like the ideal fit and it's going to be the best for him. I could see that. I think with him too, you know, how does he want to get paid? He has never really had a big NBA contract, so I'm assuming this is the one he's going to get. You know, this is the kind of money he's going to make, going to set him up for the rest of his life. So he's probably going to take the most money wherever he can. But I think for him, it's going to be, you know, I think he could, you know, something could offer him 2 for 25, but pick up him 3 for 30, which would he rather have? You know, maybe take the $30 million because it locks you in right now to guaranteed money versus 25, you might see. So that's how I feel. You know, I think he will ultimately get paid a $25 to $30 million contract. I just am hesitant to say it's gonna be with the Pacers, I guess. I'm just not sure he wants to be here. It didn't seem like he was super upset with how the playoffs went. The last question I kind of had for lingering with him is, you know, as the Pacers, how does he fit into your window? Now, obviously, you want to keep good players, but if the team's going for it next year, you do all you can to re-sign him. I mean, he is the perfect 7th-8th man. If they bring everybody back and just roll it back and say, or, you know, make one tweak in the starting lineup, let's say, but bring everybody else back and, you know, and I'm not saying a victory, but like a center trade and just roll it back. He's a great guy you want on this roster. I mean, if you're thinking next year is the year to compete, you want him. If you're thinking it's 3 years, you might be willing to let him go. But also, he's an asset, right? If you can get him on a 3 for 30 and he can just shoot well, you can probably trade him in a year or two for something. You know, maybe you won't get a huge plus value, but you can maybe get a second, a late first, use him in the contract and whatever. I mean, there is value in just having the player on the contract in future trades and whatnot, especially if you want to sign him and don't make another move and then you want to package him together with the player later on to get, you know, to match bigger salaries. That's always a possibility, right? It's the mid-level. The thing is you get it every year unless you don't have the space, whatever the space between. Basically, the mid-level is up to $10 million roughly between if you're above the salary cap line but below the tax threshold. So, like, if the tax is 130 and you're making and your team has 125 million salaries already, your mid-level is 5, but if it's 120, it's 10, and there's kind of a cap at that around that range, give or take. So we'll see what they do. I think he fits a window if they're going for it in the next 2 years. If not, I'm not sure he does, but at some point you don't really want to lose the asset, right? I mean, he's a good player. He was really good this year, and I think he'll put up another one or two good seasons at this level, and then we might see a little bit decline, but who knows? I mean, he's the kind of player, too, who, because he didn't, you know, play a ton in the league, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, for basically until 2016-17, was playing 10 minutes, 15 minutes a night, playing maybe 50 games a year. I mean, so he doesn't have a ton of miles on him too. And so maybe he can get, you know, he can play to like 35 because he doesn't have a ton of miles on his body. And he's not, you know, he's a little bit frail, like skinny wise, but he seems to be durable. And that's a huge thing. If he, you know, if he's a 3-point shooter like this for the next, you know, he could stay in the league for 5 more years. If he's shooting 38%+ from three, he'll be in the league for a while, but we'll see how that holds. But he, to me, he definitely this season went from being kind of a fringe player to like, you know, a definitely rotation player on a decent team. I don't know if a rotation on like a great team, although, you know, the Lakers, I'm sure, would love to have him. I mean, you know, a lot of these really good teams have really bad depth, so he'd be a great fit to them. But I think he definitely this year has vaulted himself into a different competition from just a fringe NBA player to a, you know, legitimate rotation player. And that's because he shot 40% from three. That will do it for you pretty much on 4.5 attempts. I mean, that's how you go from being borderline to like really good. I mean, that's what Lance Stevenson's biggest problem, right? If Lance shot really well from three, he'd be in the league currently because he plays decent defense, he's hustles hard, and he can, you know, make a few passes here and stuff like that, but he just can't shoot 3-point shot, and that will kind of be the death of you in this current league, especially if you're not like a superstar who's good at other things, right? You know, players like Russell Westbrook can get away with it because they can just basically beat you to the rim, or even something like Jimmy Butler can just do some other things that works. But for the fringe players, if you can't shoot, it's really hard to make it as a guard slash, you know, small forward in this league. Just in my opinion. All right, so I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Justin Holiday. You can tweet at LockedOnPacers just to tell us how you thought he did this season and whether you think he should remain with the Pacers. We will bring you another podcast at the end of this week, probably from Tony about, I don't know what, he'll surprise you. That's what he told me on my on my text today with him. As always, you can follow him at TEastNBA, me at FreeMadam5. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys tomorrow.